Hello and welcome to the University of Nottingham podcast series. My name is Olivia Drager and today I'm talking to Dr. Richard Field about biodiversity and conservation. Dr. Field, you are involved in two very different locations, Indonesia and Central America, in projects related to conservation and biodiversity. Can you tell us something about the similarities and differences within these two projects?
They're both based in national parks, but these national parks are really very different ones. So they do have protected status. If I start with Krakatoa, this is really part of the World's Heritage. It was a very famous eruption in 1883, which changed the world in a number of ways, as well as changing the actual islands of Krakatoa. For instance, it was largely responsible, at least according to Simon Winchester's popular book, for the rise of Reuters news agency. It was the cause of huge, brilliant red sunsets that became part of Turner's paintings and so on. So it was very influential for a number of reasons, and so it has a lot of historic interest. It also has a lot of scientific interest, which I'll come on to in a bit. Krakatoa is uninhabited. It's a tourist attraction. It's dangerous because of the continuing eruptions of the volcano, but that's on and off. Sometimes it's more dangerous than others. But people generally don't want to live there because they know that it's been dangerous in the past and will be again. Its plants and animals are not particularly precious. They're fairly common. They're the species that have managed to get back to the islands after the eruptions. So they don't tend to be endemic species or particularly high-profile species. So it's not a national park for those reasons. It's a national park because of its historical interest.
Krakatoa is probably best known to many people for the eruption of the volcano in 1883. We tend to think of volcanoes as very barren sites. What makes them so interesting for the study of conservation and biodiversity?
Well, I think volcanoes in general aren't necessarily particularly ecologically interesting or scientifically interesting. The volcanoes would probably be most interesting if they have led to some form of natural experiment. A natural experiment being where something happens that would not normally be possible. So you wouldn't clear a whole area, sterilise a largish island for, well, it's not usually logistically possible and it wouldn't be morally very right either. But sometimes a volcano will do it for you, as happened in Krakatoa's case. So a natural experiment is something like that, where researchers are essentially trying to capitalise on something that's happened naturally or beyond their control, use it to study things that they would have liked to study if they'd been able to experiment at that scale or in that way. Other examples, I know some people who've done work on carbon dioxide enrichment because some volcanoes have carbon dioxide that leaks out of vents, and because it's heavier than air, it tends to collect in depressions. And right in the middle of that, you've got very high carbon dioxide concentration. As you move out, it becomes less. So you get a gradient, and you can see what happens when carbon dioxide is elevated in a fairly natural scenario. That would be another example. Lava flows will tend to come out of volcanoes every so often, and they can produce essentially new land. They'll wipe out what was there, and so you have land of different ages right next to each other, which makes a good experimental system. In the case of Krakatoa, the big eruptions in 1883 effectively sterilised the three islands that remained after the eruption. A lot of the land actually went up into the sky, somewhat exploded. But there were three islands remaining of a reasonable size, and they were all sterilised at the same point in time. And then the communities, the plants and the animal communities, have rebuilt over time, coming in from the sea, coming in from the nearby islands, the largest islands in particular of Java and Sumatra. And so we've got three islands that started at the same point, in more or less the same place, but they've built up and have often produced rather different communities. So they can tell us a lot about how communities build up, about how dispersal affects ecological systems and various other ecological processes, such as colonisation, extinction, all these sorts of things.
Popular interest in conservation tends to focus on high-profile animals, the orangutan, the mountain gorilla, and the rhino. You seem to work with some very unusual and much less well-known species. What are these species and why are they so important in understanding biodiversity?
Right, I think this is a good time to talk about the other site, the other main site in the tropics, which is Kosciuszko National Park in Honduras. Unlike Krakatoa, well, it is a national park like Krakatoa, but unlike Krakatoa, it is inhabited. The people live there. It's under considerable threat from habitat clearance, from hunting, logging, all these sorts of things that are well known around the world for being causes of extinction and various other ecological problems. So this national park has a very different reason. It was actually set up as a national park, or was protected in the first place, for water conservation purposes. It's quite near a large city, the largest city in Honduras. And they set up originally just the 1,800-metre contour, so all the highest land was protected in order to protect water supply to the cities. Since then, since the 1980s, it's actually been protected more widely. They've expanded the area of protection, and it's a national park for reasons of the plants and animals that live there, as well as the water supply. But it's under threat, and it's got, as you say, some unusual species in it. In fact, we've discovered, we're not really sure yet, because they're still being identified or named, but we've discovered probably at least 10 vertebrate species new to science and never been seen before by any scientist and never described. In addition, there's quite a lot of endemic species, that species not found anywhere else in the world. And there are some reasonably charismatic species, maybe not as much as orangutans and gorillas. But we do have Baird's tapir, which is, I don't really know how you'd describe it. I suppose it's somewhere between a pig and a cow, something like that. And we also have resplendent quetzals, which are beautiful birds that bird watchers from around the world, if they haven't seen them, generally want to go and have a look at. They're really quite amazing creatures. There's also an insect called a scarab beetle, and they come in these brilliant gold and silver colours, and they can be collector's items. So there are, and we also have three species of primate. We've got howler monkeys, capuchins, and spider monkeys. So there are some species that we can put forward as saying, look, here are some flagship species, is the name that's often used for it. But really, the main purpose of conserving a national park like Cosuco, which, by the way, is the Spanish for armadillo, where there are armadillos there as well. But the main purpose for protecting this is really to try to preserve biodiversity. Species that we don't know about, lots of restricted range species, high biodiversity, and also the habitats that are found. There's some fairly unusual habitats there, such as cloud forest.
How can your research help us understand the best ways of managing sites such as the rainforest in Honduras and the island of Krakatoa?
That's a very difficult question, but I think a lot of research on this issue over the last 10, 15 years or maybe more has switched from trying to, or from a main focus on trying to conserve particular parks to having those protected areas within a landscape that has some sort of conservation strategy, I suppose. And so the idea really is that you manage whole landscapes for both human use and conservation, with certain areas that are more heavily protected than others. And I think we really need to understand that and to apply those principles. Now, how does that relate to my research? Well, one thing in Honduras, we do put some emphasis on looking at the socioeconomic side of things as well as the ecological side of things. So we have teams working there whose entire focus is to talk to the people, to try to understand the social system, the economic structure. And that leads towards ways of trying to conserve the national park and the area around it via helping the people to get a better life. So it's actually a development and conservation project at the same time. And the other main issue, I think, here is we have to try to understand scale. My own work, we've been talking about Krakatoa, which is looking at islands which are a few kilometres across. Cosuco National Park is a similar sort of size, but it's connected to the rest of the area around it, so it's not an island. But my other main strand of research is global scale biodiversity patterns, which is much more theoretical. But I think we need to try to understand, and of course I'm never going to answer all this myself, but we do need to understand patterns at the largest scale down to individual sites and how they all fit together, both within the biodiversity context and the social context, attempts to conserve, and so on. And there is a recognition of this more widely. There's a new subfield, if you like, of biogeography and conservation, which is emerging, called conservation biogeography, which is essentially recognising these issues and trying to both develop biogeographic theory and then apply that theory to conservation. It's a very young field, and we're still seeing how it's emerging, but I think it is an important way to go. So my work involves both biogeographic theory and conservation on the ground, and I think trying to meld those two together as much as possible is definitely the way to go.
Dr. Field, thank you very much for talking to me today.
Thank you.